Welcome, everybody, to the All About Windows Phone Insight podcast. I'm not Ewan Spence. Ewan actually has a few other jobs. One of them is Eurovision podcasting. So he's up in Sweden for a couple of weeks doing some work up there. In the meantime, I'm as the substitute, and I'm forbidden to mention the S word, Rafe. And that is, of course, Symbian.
That's right. I think everyone knows that Steve does a lot of writing over on our sister site, All About Symbian. You can also hear his tones on the All About Symbian podcast. So he's very familiar with podcasting, and of course, his own great phone show chat, as well as a video version of that, the phone show. You can find that all on stevelitchfield.com for those of you who aren't already subscribed. And if not, why not? But yes, more than an acceptable substitute, Steve. And we have got quite a bit to talk about. So Ewan's missing out on an exciting week, but I suspect we'll get his opinion on the new devices in due course.
Yes, it's quite appropriate, really, that I should be on and substituting this particular week, because not only are they new devices, but both of them have an imaging focus, if I may use that pun. Let's leave perhaps the star of the podcast, the Lumia 925 from Nokia, to a bit later on. Let's just start with this Lumia 928, which was launched first last week, exclusively for Verizon in the USA. Now, that doesn't sound very exciting for us UK and world listeners, but it is significant in that it has the first Lumia device, first Windows phone from Nokia with a Xenon flash, which is something I've been ranting about and eulogizing for a long, long time. Before we go into the Xenon flash and the camera side of this Lumia 928, Rafe, do you want to just set up the device and Verizon's vision here?
Yeah, I mean, I think really you can think of this as, you know, Verizon's version of the Lumia 920. I did get to see it briefly yesterday at the launch event. And I mean, it's squarer. It feels more like a design that favors the Americans. Actually, for those that have actually seen some of the other custom variants for the US, the 822 and the 810 for Verizon and T-Mobile respectively, it kind of follows that design pattern a bit more. Personally, I found it a little bit plasticky and a bit blocky, but I think that kind of design thing is very much down to personal preference. But, you know, in terms of hardware, if you move away from the actual design, it's very similar to the 920. In fact, we'll be saying very much the same about the 925 in just a moment. But the 928 is, if you like, you know, a special handset for Verizon. I mean, the way Nokia described it is that they co-developed it with Verizon, and one of the reasons it's got a Xenon flash in it is because that's what Verizon wanted. They were going after a specific target market, tended to be the sort of the 20-somethings and maybe a little bit younger as well, who spend a lot of their time out in clubs and bars and want to be able to capture a certain type of photograph. And I'm sure Steve will describe the benefits of Xenon in a bit. And saying that he's promoted it and, you know, is a bit of a fan is, I think, a slight exaggeration there. Steve goes absolutely mental about Xenon. It's probably one of his most requested features, but it's interesting. I kind of asked Nokia about it, and they said, you know, like anything, there are compromises when you include technology like that. And for Xenon, it's really about the impact that it has on battery life, and also the actual Xenon component is quite big. It's not just the flash unit, which, as you'll see from photographs of it, is bigger than a dual LED flash. It also requires a capacitor to go with it, and both of those take up, you know, valuable space. They can add to the thickness of the device. So, you know, there are perfectly good reasons why, you know, not to have a Xenon flash in a device, but I think there's a large group of people who seem to be very much in favor of it. So it's interesting that this is on a US specific handset. I suspect we won't see much of it here on All About Windows Phone because we're UK based and it's a US handset, but we will point out to you some of the reviews as they come out. But yes, think of it really as, you know, the Verizon specific version of the 920. You know, AT&T in the States has the Lumia 920. T-Mobile, we'll talk about it in a minute, is going to get the 925. So actually three of the US carriers now all have three different flagship handsets from Nokia. You do despair a little bit of the US market sometimes and why that has to happen like that. I guess there's a choice going on, and that's the business strategy for those US operators.
Yeah, it's kind of bittersweet, really, me seeing that the Xenon flash appear on this Lumia 928, because it's got the same optically image stabilized camera as the Lumia 920, which means it's the camera unit itself is optimized for longer shutter times and cancelling out the user's handshake during those longer shutter times. So, for example, in a low light situation, the shutter might be open for half a second, not a problem, because it's all stabilized and you get a nice crisp shot. But the Xenon Flash is all about incredibly fast shutter times. It means you're down the pub, down the disco, at the party, at the event, people are moving, and you have the flash fires for around 10 to 15 microseconds. And so basically, you can have the it lights up the room, and you can take the shot as fast as you like, and you're going to capture that Xenon Flash. So combining a camera which is optimized for longer shutter times with a flash which is optimized for shorter shutter times just seems a tiny bit incongruous to me. And I actually wasn't surprised to see the 925, which we'll mention in a moment, come out with dual LED. So in other words, a flash technology which actually worked better with the OIS than Xenon. So although it's great, it was lovely to see Xenon on a Nokia Windows phone at last, I can't help feeling it might not quite work well in practice.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see when we actually see the review test. I mean, I think a lot of this, honestly, is about putting a bit of differentiation into the devices, maybe targeting a slightly different market. As I say, you know, it is great for capturing those kind of low-light subjects when they're moving. But there's actually been some tweaks, which we'll talk about in the 925 camera, that helps with that as well. And so I agree with Steve. I'm not horrendously disappointed. I mean, I like Xenon Flash as well. I used an N82, a Symbian device, for a long time because of its great camera, and part of that was the Xenon Flash. But it's interesting to hear Steve sort of admit to, you know, not being entirely disappointed, and it is right, you know, with OIS, you know, it's a different approach, and, you know, with any camera, you kind of have to optimize around certain capture conditions, and it does feel like the 928's a bit of a double, you know, two-headed hydra, and maybe is it going to, you know, disappoint? I don't think so. I'm sure this is going to do really well. Listening to some of our US readers send in their email saying they're really excited to see this handset come onto Verizon. And previously, Verizon haven't really had a flagship device from Nokia. You know, they've had the 822, which was actually one of the best-selling Windows phone devices in the US. So it'll be really interesting to see what they can do with the 928, and if they get behind it with a big marketing campaign, I suspect it could surprise us with how well it sells.
Yeah, just probably a slinky link. Let's link seamlessly into the Lumia 925, which was launched yesterday, and perhaps just start with that camera point, because that's perhaps the biggest single thing I wanted to talk about, being a camera-centric chap. And now, we've talked about Xenon Flash being a way of capturing, you know, low-light situations where people are moving, but there are other ways if you think laterally. And what Nokia have done with the 925 is, A, increase the sensitivity of the sensor effectively by making it electronically more sensitive, up to ISO 3200, which is actually a technical term, but it means it's very, very sensitive. It will let you take very fast shots and allow a certain amount of noise in, but accepting the fact that you have a very short shutter time. And add that to the pulse LEDs, this sort of second or whatever we're up to now, third generation LED technology. And a very large lens. I mean, it was f/2.0, I think, Ray?
That's right, yes.
Yeah, so add those three factors together, and you've actually got a camera which can take pretty decent shots. As long as people aren't moving wildly, you can get a pretty crisp shot in a fairly short shutter time. So, and the OIS, of course, does take out any camera shake from the user. So I'm going to give Nokia the benefit of the doubt here. I think they've made the right moves with the 925 over the 920, which was limited in some degree. They do promise, Rafe, that this ISO 3200 settings update can be retroactively applied to the Lumia 920. So maybe my 920 will also pick up new algorithms and the new ISO, and the 920 will then also produce better low-light shots of moving objects.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Actually, one of the revelations for me of this particular announcement, Nokia talked about providing some of these software updates that are in the 925 to old devices through something called the Nokia Lumia Amber software update. Effectively, what that means is the firmware that you get on the 925 is going to be available on the old devices. Now, obviously, there are custom bits on each device, but there are also a lot of bits that apply, you know, quite broadly. And one of them is the image processing algorithms. We'll talk about those in a minute. Another, as Steve was talking about, is, if you like, the settings that the camera can, you know, apply. And ISO is the one that was talked about on the day quite a bit. And going up from what it is now, ISO 800 to 3200, you know, that's a big step up. That should apply to probably all devices, maybe not the Lumia 520. These details are still being finalized by the Nokia imaging teams, because the 5, 520 camera isn't quite as capable, but we should see this on the 620, the 720, the 820, and the 920. I think it's fair to say you'll see the biggest impact on those devices that already have good quality cameras. So the 720 and the 920, I think, will be worth watching here. Yeah. I was shown some kind of before and after shots, you know, taken with the 920 and then taken with the 925. Now, the 925 does have an extra lens in the camera hardware. We'll talk about that in a minute. But actually, I think the impact of that is only a minor contributing factor. I was really taken aback by these comparison shots. I mean, Steve, you did some comparisons when the PR 1.1 or the Portico update came out for Lumia 920. And, you know, there were some observable differences. This time, the differences were really very obvious. Now, of course, in a Nokia presentation, Nokia interview, you'd expect them to be able to showcase, you know, the biggest differences. But particularly when you're cropping into images, and that's something obviously that Steve does, and we do when we're doing our camera comparison pieces, there was a real obvious difference in detail, and it didn't feel over-processed. There wasn't too much of a noise problem, and it got rid of kind of the soft focus that the Lumia 920, to a certain extent, has been plagued by. I mean, it's an interesting issue, this, because you don't really see it until you crop right into the images, and this applies both in low-light shots, but also in daylight. And so kind of my takeaway from this was actually they've really improved the daylight performance of the camera, and the low light stuff has gone even further ahead of the competition. So I actually, you know, we always talk about three things being important in digital cameras, you know, the sensor characteristics, the optics, and the software processing. It's easy to talk about the first two because you quite often apply numbers to them. The third is something of a black box, but I was, you know, this is the first time I've really gone, wow, I can really see the difference from software processing. I want to try it out for myself, obviously, but I mean, I would expect this to be a pretty dramatic update to camera performance. And obviously, we'll see it most obviously in the 920, because we'll, you know, see the kind of the before and after effect. But it does mean that the 925 also has a significantly better camera than that which is in the 920 in its current form. Yeah. So really quite exciting. And, you know, I got to talk to Nokia's imaging guru about this, and you know, he's a very passionate guy, but he was showing evidence in either the shots, you know, and it was like talking to Steve actually when he's showing off his cropped shots, you know, specifically looking at detail, for example, kind of the lining of a bit of rope and looking at the individual fibers or the border in a, you know, in a low light condition, you know, all of these are edge cases where you see these differences. And so it really did bring it home to me, the importance of software processing. So I'm always a bit reluctant to get too enthusiastic about this, but actually I think this update, particularly on the software processing or the algorithm side, is really something quite special. So I think people will be really pleased to see this update come to the existing devices. Yeah. I think it's, you know, a real step up in imaging performance, one that I personally never expected to see just from, you know, software processing changes.
Yeah, of course, we have got a couple of months to wait until it actually rolls out to existing devices. But just to echo what you said about software processing and image processing, being able to extract surprising amounts of detail. We should remember, of course, that the Nokia 828 back on the Symbian platform actually works using image processing. It takes a large sensor and does digital manipulation of a huge number of raw pixels to produce a very high quality image. We've also got the Galaxy S4, which I've been testing this week, running Android, with the same size sensor and camera unit as things like the Lumia 920 and the Galaxy S3 and the iPhone 5 and so forth. But it produces astonishing amounts of detail. And all I can put it down to is Samsung's image processor and their software algorithms. So I'm not at all surprised to hear you say that, albeit slightly late to the party and a few months to wait, that Nokia's imaging team have also got some pretty tasty and processing enhancements just around the corner.
I mean, the interesting thing about this, of course, is to ask, well, why didn't you get these the first time around? And I ask, this is that question. And the answer came back was, well, the 920 was kind of our foundation, and that, you know, we are building on that. And these are the kind of the fine detail tweaks, you know, did the heavy lifting with the first device. And to be fair, that does tend to be how camera modules work. I mean, we've seen it in the past that, you know, you introduce a new camera module and then you build on that subsequently with releases. I think also it might be fair to say that the Nokia team has been learning about getting the most out of Windows Phone. We're not sort of completely getting all the details on how this works. Understandably, the companies are quite defensive and don't talk in detail about how all this image processing works. It's kind of part of the secret sauce. I described it as a black box, and companies want to have it stay that way for good reason, and because obviously it's an important part of performance. But yes, you know, like you say, Steve, I think there's plenty of potential there. And what I think what this will do is bring up the Lumia devices, certainly at the high end with the 920 and the 925, to something similar to what, you know, we're seeing with other leading camera phones in daylight conditions. And Nokia's already ahead in low light for various reasons that we talked about. I guess we should just mention one thing also with this camera. It does actually have an extra lens element in it. It's now got six lens elements in it, which is the first, as far as we know, for a smartphone. Steve, you know, what's the significance of something like that?
And I would say very little. It's very much like a Spinal Tap camera moment. Basically, other lens elements, other cameras have got five elements. This has got six, so it must be one better. And I guess at some point we'll reach 11 lens elements, then we really can do the Spinal Tap joke. And I think Nokia just basically saying we've improved the optics, we've got a different arrangement of lenses, and they process light slightly more efficiently. We'll get crisper images, and that's fine. That's all we need to know. The actual details are far too complicated. I do want to make one point, Rafe, that... it's not just about, you said, well, why didn't we get these software algorithms first time around for the Lumia 920? And there are two other factors. One is the fact that OIS, optical image stabilization, was completely brand new to Nokia at that point, and they were still learning about it. And I still suspect that this first generation OIS camera, that the software is not quite compensating for all the little wobbles that it's having to do to stabilize the image. And I suspect that now for the 925, and also rolling into the updates, they've now worked out how to compensate fully in software for any OIS fuzziness or wiggles or noise or whatever. And they've also got the Windows Phone GDR2 update, which has got new enablers and new things under the hood. And maybe some commentators are right. Maybe the existing Windows Phone release is just very slightly holding back what Nokia can do in imaging. And with the new update with this GDR2, I know there are a huge amount of things fixed under the hood. Then maybe that's the enabler that lets all these extra image processing improvements take place.
Yeah, that's a possibility. I mean, I think personally, it's probably not something in imaging that's coming from GDR2. It's more about, as you say, the experience having, you know, introduced OIS and then kind of getting familiar with how it works. And there are literally hundreds of settings that can be tweaked. You know, I was talking about, for example, the noise filter. That's just one element of the processing that goes on. And, you know, Nokia sit there having meetings, deciding whether to increase it by plus or minus one on a scale of 200. And that gives you the idea of the amount of discussion and, you know, detail that goes into designing these image processing algorithms. And that's just one element of it. There's a lot more than just that. And so it's easy to see why this refinement does take a bit of time. But we'll obviously have to wait until we get the device in our own hands. But based on, you know, what I saw on some of the sample images, and bear in mind that was all with kind of prototype devices, and there's still some development to go, things were looking pretty impressive. But as I say, it's hard to give a full assessment. But, you know, my general feeling would be that there is a significant step up coming here.
Yeah, but so having taken the camera side of things for the Lumia 928 and the 925, which is the one launched yesterday, let's just revert to the overall device and take a full view, Ray. You've got the 920 itself. That was widely perceived as not a nice Windows Phone flagship, but almost everyone commented on how bulky and heavy it was, which is fine. Some people, including me, I like heavy phones. They reassure me that they're high quality and they've got a lot of electronics inside. But there were these persistent comments that it was too thick, too bulky, and too heavy. And it seems to me with this 925, they have addressed all of those with comparatively few compromises. The big one, I guess, is the loss of the wireless charging, which you can now add in via an extra case. But other than that, you've got a slimmer body with a metal frame, polycarbonate insert on the back that is still sealed. You still can't get at the battery, so it still feels like a unibody device. But it's a couple of mil thinner, Rafe. How did it feel in the hand?
That's right. I mean, you know, you look at spec numbers and you go, well, it's 20%. Thinner, and it's about 30% lighter. It's a big difference just in those numbers, but even more so when you feel it in the hand. You know, you weigh up the device on either side, and what I'd say is, yeah, the 920 was a bulky device. Like you, I didn't really mind, but I think this is a device that will appeal much more generally, because, you know, understandably people get put off by that thing. And so it puts it in, it's not actually quite as light as something like the HTC One or the iPhone, but it puts it into that same ballpark. And so that kind of the weight and thickness thing will go away and not matter anymore. And I think that is important, because it kind of puts them on an equal competitive footing. You know, it feels great in the hand. It actually feels, because of the actual shape of it, and I don't know, maybe it's something about metal makes it feel a bit thinner than polycarbonate. And so that kind of metal frame around the outside, which actually Nokia are using for the Aerial, there's some really clever aerial engineering going on in there. Don't worry about death grip, by the way. It's a self-tuning aerial. And so that means however you hold it, it will compensate. And the performance is exactly the same as if it was in a polycarbonate body. I mean, really impressive stuff there. Probably more detail than we need to get into there, but I think that's one of the exciting bits of the hardware innovation in this device. And it just feels like a more polished, sleek device. I mean, these trends come and go. When the first polycarbonate device came out, they felt really new and exciting. And I think this happens to all gadgets and all phone devices. You know, you get the new and shiny syndrome, and the 925 definitely benefits from that. And actually, the design grew on me throughout the day. You know, I got to hold one in the hand. There's various different colors. There's sort of, you know, a white version. I think it's called silver. I'll describe it as gray, and then a black version. The black version is, you know, quite a conservative design, and it's anodized black aluminium on the side. It's sort of bare aluminium for the white and for the silver version. And, you know, they both look very attractive as well. And it's not always apparent in the photos that there is a kind of a separate polycarbonate back piece, but it is there. But actually, the aluminium frame is cut out of a single block of aluminium. So it's all about the structural kind of integral sturdiness of the device. And that's great. And then everything else, including that polycarbonate back piece, is kind of fitted inside it. I mean, it's the latest of Nokia's what they refer to as extreme product design. So basically, you start with a frame and then you jam all the bits into all the chips, all the screens, the camera, etc., etc. And so you end up with a device. I mean, you can't tell it's not a unibody design. And in a sense, in the important way, it is a unibody design, because it's got the, you know, the frame right round the outside, which is really where the strength comes from. And there's also, you know, obviously a frame inside underneath the polycarbonate casing. But as I say, a really nice looking design. And I think, you know, the 920, there wasn't anything bad about it when it first came out. We all sort of were wowed by it. But you see the 925, and yes, it's definitely a step forward.
Yeah, the screen technology was interesting, because they've changed it from LCD and backlit LCD to AMOLED. Now, this is something which I didn't quite believe when I saw it on the spec sheet for the Lumia 928, partly because I believe that the device in their demo video was actually a proto, was running an LCD screen rather than AMOLED. But obviously, the production versions will be AMOLED. And so I guess you saw it firsthand. How did it compare in terms of clarity, responsiveness and colours to the existing 920 screen?
That's a good question, Steve. I think in terms of kind of the performance, there's little to choose between them. I mean, people will have preferences for LCD and AMOLED, but I actually feel that the differences between those two technologies have actually come down in the last few years. It always used to be that AMOLED was much brighter and crisper. You know, the LCD screen sometimes had was said to be, if you like, more accurate, and you know, sometimes had better luminance. But one of the things about this AMOLED screen, it's actually got a luminance of 600 nits. That's one of the highest in any smartphone that I'm aware of. But there's actually another advantage to using this AMOLED technology. It's related to the thickness of the device. It means there's no air gap. I mean, actually, it's a laminated screen. And so the actual screen assembly is thinner than in the 920, and also weighs less. So that's one of the reasons they've been able to reduce the thickness and the weight of the device. But, you know, comparing them side by side, they're both really good screens. I mean, Nokia has a reputation for creating good screens, and the 925 won't do anything to damage that. Could I pick one over the other? Honestly, probably not. I mean, I was told that, for example, that the 925 has the next generation of super sensitive touch. What that actually means is you can run a few more materials across the screen and use it instead of your finger. Okay, that's great to see. You know, more options on inputs, always going to be a good thing. It also has got better viewing angles. I mean, it obviously, when you get to 90 degrees, the screen disappears. But anything above 90 degrees, you're basically able to see some of the screen. So that's also nice. You know, if you've got your phone sitting on your desk and you're looking at an angle, being able to see the screen clearly is a helpful thing to have. And so this does feel like there's no kind of sacrifice from switching to AMOLED and LCD. There will, of course, be people who prefer one or the other. But, you know, it's not like it's going to a pentile screen. This is, you know, red, green, blue stripe. And so this is a high quality screen. If you look at some of the photos, I'll put some side-by-side photos on the site, you'll see actually it's hard to pick out the difference. Obviously, you can see the difference in technology if you know what you're looking at. But I think day-to-day, I can't see there being any complaints. And if anything, I think the 925 will probably have the edge because there are a lot of people that like that kind of added vibrancy of AMOLED.
Yeah, of course, I'm a huge AMOLED fan as well from my Symbian days, and I just love the colours. And I love, well, I say, love the fact that the screen can be viewed from any angle because the pixels are emitting their own light. You don't have to worry about a reflection off the crystals from a backlight plane. But there's one thing, Rafe, about AMOLED screens, which I know is now going to be possible, is people from the Nokia N9 running Mego and all Symbian devices with AMOLED screens have used this sleeping screen clock and notifications whereby even when the device is, that the screen is normally locked and turned off, it's still showing, the pixels are still glowing with the time and the essential information. And I gather the 925 has this, and it will also be retrofitted as part of the update to the older 820.
Yeah, this is one that wasn't actually on display yesterday. I did try and find out about it, but no luck. But we understand it is coming. There's been several rumours about it, and it would make sense as one of the reasons that Nokia's kind of switched to this AMOLED technology. The other thing kind of related to the screen lock technology is that the device will now support double tap to unlock. This was something that kind of first was seen, I think, on the N9, Nokia's Hot Mountain Mego device. It's kind of a little extra, but for those who have used it, it's kind of a really elegant way of unlocking your device. I mean, rather than, you know, pressing the lock screen on the side of the device and then starting up, you just double tap on the screen and, you know, it will wake up. I think that's a nice extra to have. I guess while we're talking about screen technology, it's also worth mentioning that the Lumia 925, and again going back in the software update to older devices, will get a new kind of a profile or color profile setting within the I think it's the screen and brightness module of the settings app. What does that do? Well, some people, you know, like setting their screen, you know, slightly different color profile. Maybe they want it a bit more vivid, or maybe they prefer natural colors. And so what this is going to do is offer a slider which basically allows you to set 11 different degrees of vividness up. And there's also going to be a setting that allows you to switch between cool, neutral and warm options. And so it's just another example of Nokia doing smart work on top of Windows Phone to give users a bit more choice. And, you know, frankly, I think Nokia has done really well in screen innovation. We've had things like super sensitive touch, and they're continuing to push the boundaries here. And so they deserve their reputation for having, you know, some of the best screens on mobile phone devices. It's not just about the technology of the screen. It's also some of the extras that you're doing with it. And personally, I really, really like sleeping screen on my Symbian devices. So I really hope that does come forward. As I say, not completely confirmed yet, but I'm pretty sure we're going to see that.
Yeah, really looking forward to that. At the risk of straying too far back towards camera territory, Ray, I did notice there was a whole new application which called Smart Camera. Now, Rafe will decide to give you a description of exactly what Smart Camera does in a minute, but I did notice that some of its functions almost mirror what you can now do on things like the Samsung Galaxy S4, also hot off the press. Although I'd probably guess that the development time on these applications, I mean, they must have started this before the details of the GS4 were announced. So I guess we can't accuse Nokia of plagiarism, but it does seem to be a few parallels. And I guess the main difference I saw was the fact that with Nokia's Smart Camera application, you can basically take the burst mode of images first and then worry about what to do with it afterwards. Whereas with the Samsung, you have to think, oh, which of the 15 modes do I need before I take the shots? So I think Nokia's way is definitely better here.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this Smart Camera app is one of these Windows Phone 8 lens app. And again, it's going to be going back to the other Windows Phone 8 devices. I mean, yes, you're right. It's been in development for a while. And I mean, I think it's probably fair to say all the companies borrow from each other. I actually think this innovation, we've probably seen HTC do as much of it as Samsung, and Nokia itself has done something. I mean, effectively, this Smart Camera is the next version of the existing Smart Shoot camera lens. That's the one that allows you to switch out faces and also do some other things with burst mode. This is kind of the next generation on, and it's significantly more advanced, and it's probably better than the ones you'll find on competing devices. And the reason for that is, as you say, Steve, you don't have to choose before taking the camera, but it's also doing it at 5 megapixels resolution. That's good because when you get the finished results, you can actually print them out up to A3 size, not just share them on social media or view them on the phone itself. There are, I guess, three things I'll talk about here in terms of it's adding extra modes. One is a motion focus. So what that effectively does is it analyzes the different frames that you take, because all of these are based on burst mode, effectively capturing 10 or so images one after the other. It looks for a moving object in the image, and then it will let you kind of select that, and then it will blur the background. So you kind of get more of this emphasis on movement. But more than that, it'll actually let you select that moving object and then change where it appears in the frame based on obviously all those blur shots. So for example, if you're taking a picture of a skateboarder, you can choose to have him, you know, in the air, or you can choose to have it on the ground, or whichever flip that's going on. And so it's more than just sort of selecting out the movement, it's actually selecting which bit of the movement you want in your picture. Similarly, you've got best shot, that's kind of a very standard burst mode where you've got 10 shots, you choose which is the best one, you can then save that, do that stuff with it. There's also action shot, which is a kind of a variation on the motion focus mode. What this does is, again, it analyzes the pictures for a moving object and then allows you to show that moving object multiple times. So, you know, if someone's running through an image, you'll see multiple images of that person. The nice thing about this is it's got a UI that lets you select exactly which frames you want to include. So you might include all 10 frames for a fast moving object. For a slower moving object, you know, you actually want separation between each object. You say, right, I just want the first one, the middle one, and the last one. And so there's, you know, quite a fine degree of control. And I think what really stands out for me for this smart camera is that Nokia built a very easy to use UI. I mean, I think, you know, these kind of gimmicks have been on camera smartphones for a while, and they're getting more sophisticated as the, you know, processing power increases. And believe me, there's a lot of processing power going on to do this kind of thing. It's probably the single most intensive thing you can do on the phone in terms of taxing the processor and the available memory. But they have to be easy to use. And a lot of the time, and, you know, I've done this with, you know, previous HTC and Samsung devices, I've liked some of the extras, but I never get round to using them simply because, you know, it becomes a bit fiddly or you don't remember. And so Nokia have done a lot of work in making it a really easy to use experience. I think some people go, it doesn't offer me quite the control I want. That's a fair enough comment. And, you know, some people will want something like HDR. Well, there are third party apps available for this. And I guess we should mention one of the things that comes in the new Windows Phone GDR2 update we talked about is the ability to set any lens app as the default camera app. So you can switch out the camera app and have something else appear instead. I think that's a nice thing. So you might choose to use this, you know, smart camera app, for example, because you, you know, you get the best shot and that's kind of like using it as an ordinary camera, but just grabbing the best image, or you can start being creative with it. I was quite impressed by this, more so than some of Nokia's other lens apps. I feel that this is one that, you know, would probably have broader appeal, but I think thing to take away from this, you know, you're right, it's in a lot of other camera phones, a lot of other, you know, competing devices have this. I think what they don't have is probably the easy to use nature, and that kind of does go hand in hand with Windows Phone. It's maybe more approachable for the beginner, and so might well end up getting used more. We'll have to wait and see. It'll be really interesting to get Steve's reaction to this, because he's kind of the imaging guru around here. Now, does it appeal to you despite being an imaging purist, Steve?
It does appeal to me to try out. I was a bit put off by some of the reports coming out of the event yesterday that saying it's actually quite slow. Once you've taken the shots, it is about, what, 10, 15 seconds processing time to crunch it all together before you can kind of work with it. And do you think that time will come down? Because on other devices, for example, this Galaxy S4 here, I think it's all the rendering, the processing is done so quickly. Maybe it's being GPU accelerated. It's done in a second or so. What was the time for you, and do you think it will come down?
Well, the time I was observing was maybe about 10 seconds, and that was regardless of, you know, this was going into the editing stage, because effectively what you're doing is editing these images, and that didn't matter whether it was capturing or going back to an older image and editing course. This is one of the advantages of the camera lens apps. You can actually go back and edit these photos at any time. That's kind of another advantage that the Nokia often has over its competitors. But yes, it was a bit slow. It was maybe 10 to 15 seconds. Now, these were with kind of an early test version, so I'd expect that to come down a bit, but I'm not really anticipating that dramatic drop. Maybe it'll get to 5 seconds. We'll have to wait and see. There is partly a reason for this, and that's because Nokia is actually doing some pretty smart stuff with the way it stores these images. As you can imagine, taking 10 5 megapixel images soon starts eating up your space, but actually doing some intelligent sort of processing on the fly to make sure they don't take up too much space. I assume what they're doing is analyzing the differences and just storing that kind of information rather than just storing the raw image files. And so there is kind of an advantage to that. Is the trade-off acceptable? I have to wait and see how much they can bring that performance down. But yes, I think that's going to be the one big area. You know, it needs to be fairly seamless. You don't want to be fiddling about for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
for that kind of thing. I guess you could say if you're capturing it and then move on to something else and go back and edit it later, that's okay. But yeah, there's definitely work to be done to optimize that as a user experience.
Yeah. So you asked, does it appeal to me? Well, yes, it does appeal to me in the same way the HTC Zoe function, which I know you raved about in the past in various podcasts, because both this and the HTC Zoe can be set as a default mode. So in other words, you're at an event and you don't have to stop and think, now, am I going to take a drama shot or an action shot or something else shot? And which by the time you've done all that, the thing's happened and the event's over. With the HTC Zoe, which you can set as a default, and with this, which you can set as the default camera app, and with a reasonable resolution, i.e. 5 megapixels, you can basically go into the event and accept that every shot you take is effectively going to be a burst mode smart camera shot. And at some point later, maybe on the train back home, you think, okay, I've now got 20 shots. Oh, that one can be tweaked by taking that one. And this one I can turn into an action shot. And you can do some quite clever things with them kind of offline after the event. But you haven't had to think about it during the event itself. And I think that's quite exciting.
I agree. This idea of kind of post-editing photos on your phone is really quite intriguing. You know, it's been around for a while, but the idea of doing this is to be a bit more creative and produce more interesting shots. I think it does have quite broad appeal. And actually, there's another update that came out. It's Creative Studio. That's kind of Nokia's photo editing app. And this is already available. And there's a couple more things in that for doing tilt shift and some radial blurs, as well as some kind of playful modes, which allow you to kind of put colors back into an image after making it black and white, you know, really quite effective. So that's already available. So you can go and download that now. And this smart camera is kind of an extension of that, and it's really what Nokia's already tried to do with Cinemagraph and Smart Shoot, but I think this is a more effective implementation. And I agree, I can see myself, you know, just setting this as the default camera and then going away play with it afterwards. Intriguingly, this isn't something that's available yet, but talking to the Nokia imaging team, you know, one of the things they're thinking about is, you know, how can we share these images? Because what would be really great if, you know, you could upload them to social media, but also then have your friends be able to edit, kind of remix your photos and play around with these things I'm talking about, which I think is quite an intriguing idea, because, you know, it creates more interactive photos. And so, you know, for all these action shots, all these blur shots I'm talking about, you know, you can select which frame is, you know, being used or which multiple frames are being used. At the moment, you can only do that on the phone, and then you're saving it as a JPEG and exporting it. But being able to sort of do more than that when you're actually sharing photos or maybe back on your PC, as I say, not available yet, but it's clearly a direction they're thinking about. So some intriguing possibilities, because we often wonder, you know, where a camera phone's going next. And I think this idea of doing more with images, both on the phone, but then perhaps off the phone as well, is quite an intriguing possibility.
Yeah, yeah. One final thing from the event yesterday, Rafe. I know you'll probably come back to your impressions after you've had a bit more time to think about it. And when you've got Ewan back on, you can bounce things off him as well, and maybe in next week's podcast. But one other thing that was announced was Hipstamatic. Now, I'm not a hipster in any shape or form. I have no idea what this is. So can you summarize for our delicate listeners Hipstamatic in a couple of minutes max, please?
Well, this was only shown actually in the kind of the launch, the formal presentation. It wasn't available on the demo floor, but Hipstamatic is an app that's really well known to Apple iPhone users, because it's a bit like Instagram in a sense, but actually it's really more about being creative on the phone with photography, a bit like what I was just talking about. It's the application of filters and then, you know, saving them or sharing them to social media. You know, it's had a couple of million downloads on iPhone. It's kind of a high profile app, so it's kind of a big win for Nokia to bring it across to the Windows Phone platform. You know, it comes with a certain number of filters and sort of editing functionalities, but you can buy more through you know, premium purchasing, you know, in-app billing. I understand it's going to be similar on Windows Phone, but I think one of the things that will have caught people's attention is one of the places that you can share to with Hipstagram is Instagram itself. So effectively, there is now an official way to get images from Windows Phone, or will be when this app comes out, to get images from Windows Phone onto Instagram. And Hipstagram actually have a formal relationship with Instagram, so it's legitimate. There's no dodgy API terms being broken here. And so that happened with rather whisper. But also, I think the way that this was announced was kind of a little bit Nokia thumbing its nose at Instagram, saying, you know, if you're not willing to work with us, we're going to, you know, give a really high profile shout out to your competitor. But nonetheless, you know, it's a photo app coming across that has, you know, broad appeal in the same way that something like Instagram already does on iPhone. And, you know, actually this is, it's not available on Android. It's only available on iPhone and shortly Windows Phone. So, yeah, an interesting extra app that was being announced, obviously a third party. There were a number of other apps around that were being showcased, many of which are now available in the store, the Superman app being one of them. There's the Job Lens app, which Nokia first showed off at MWC. That's coming soon, and there's going to be a UK-specific version of that. So, you know, lots of high-profile stuff going on. But I think the kind of caveat that we should apply to all of this Nokia Lumia 925 is this is kind of a mid-term update. And I think you need to understand the Nokia Lumia 925 in that context. You know, people were expecting, you know, amazing things, but bear in mind, this is just 6 months after the 920. And frankly, I was surprised that there were as many updates in terms of both the design tweaks, but also some of the software pieces going on, as we actually saw with the 925. You know, you have to be realistic and put it in the context of when it's being announced. And so, you know, people may be wondering, well, what's happening next? Yes, there will be an update to the base hardware family for Nokia's Windows Phone devices. That will probably happen later in the year or possibly even early next year. But the 925 is more of an evolutionary update than a revolutionary update, and that's actually reflected in the 920 will continue to be available on many operators. Indeed, it's still rolling out into some markets. And so I think it's probably best to see the 925 as complementary to the existing devices rather than a replacement for the 920. Although between you and me, if I had the choice, it'll be the 925 every time.
We're talking, which I guess we're having a review device the next couple of weeks, hopefully.
Yes, the device is due out sometime in the middle of June. It's probably going to be first in the major European markets with Vodafone. So that's the UK, Germany, Italy and Spain. It's also going into China with China Mobile and China Unicom, and into the US with T-Mobile. All of those should be sometime in June. I would expect it to be towards the back half of June. O2, for example, in the UK have talked about a June 13th date, so maybe a few days it will start becoming readily available. We should get our review device around that period. So look for the second week of June and we'll be really taking this Lumia 925 apart, looking at all the camera performance that we've been talking about and, you know, really showing the design. In the meantime, take a look at the galleries that will be on the site shortly. We'll also do a preview of the device and talk about some of the other technologies. There's bits we haven't covered in this podcast. There's quite a few sort of small details, which I know our audience will be interested in. So please do keep an eye on the site as well.
Well, I hope that is the Vodafone one we get to review, because that is the 32 gigabyte version. Having got used to a 32 gigabyte Lumia 920, I think I might struggle getting everything into a 16 gigabyte 925.
So. Yeah, we should probably just mention that a little bit of extra information for you. The Vodafone have the exclusive on the black version in the 32 gigabyte variant. Now, there's no reason why there can't be other devices with 32 gigabytes. There's actually just a single memory chip point within the device, and you can slot in a 32 gigabyte or a 16 gigabyte chip. The other devices, as they stand, are all 16 gigabyte, but an operator could request 32 gigabyte versions, and I wonder if there might be a SIM-free 32 gigabyte version at some point. But that's, I guess, one change from the 920 that's a bit disappointing, because like you say, Steve, fitting everything into 16 gigabyte for power users may be a bit on the tricky side, because of course there's no micro SD card slot here, but that was really all about, you know, strategy and cost savings, and Nokia's to a certain extent has to deliver what its operator partners want, and the 925, I guess I should say, is coming in at about €60 cheaper at launch pricing, so about 10 to 15% cheaper at launch pricing than the 920 was. And so not only is it slimmed down in terms of size, it's also slimmed down a bit in price. And I think that's going to make it really competitive, because it will be undercutting things like the iPhone 5 and the HTC One and Samsung Galaxy S4. And all of those are great devices. And I was chatting to those of my colleagues from the media at the event, and the kind of the general feeling was you could make a good argument for choosing any one of those four devices as kind of a good high-end flagship device. And you know, a lot comes down to personal preference, whether you like the design, what platform you want to be on, but each device has its own particular strengths, and that applies to the platform as well. And I think even more so than the 920 era, you know, and that was the Galaxy S3 and still the iPhone 5, obviously. You know, this is something that makes it really quite exciting, because you've got a lot of choice as a high-end consumer. And the 925 is probably exactly what Nokia needed in that respect, because there are some other devices coming on stream, the HTC One, the Galaxy S4, which, you know, it's competing against, and it's much better positioned to compete against them with its kind of its new design and with some of the extras that it's going to be delivering.
Yeah, and of course the things like the Galaxy S4 haven't got wireless charging, and the HTC One hasn't got wireless charging, so I guess that was one thing that could actually go.
Yeah, well, it's a shame, because personally I would accept a device that was a millimetre thicker and maybe a few grams heavier for the coil inside to have wireless charging. But actually, I don't think that's going to happen until so operators and manufacturers are willing to bundle a wireless charging inside every box that ships, and that's not going to happen until the costs come down a little bit more. I think if you tried wireless charging, you love it. And of course, the 925 has the same three dots as the 720 in the cases you can clip on. It's not the approach I prefer, but I can actually understand why it's happened.
Yeah, and it's also not going to take off, of course, until more places out and about in public have appropriate wireless charging points, and they're all compatible because there are now two different wireless charging standards. So I agree, it's early days for wireless charging, but I can absolutely understand why they axed it for the 925 and made the device thinner. One we should mention, only 16 gigabytes to play with, that one of the biggest things you'll fit into a phone these days is usually some video content. In my case, I keep some films and music videos and whatever. And you may have to rely on streaming, but there's a brand new YouTube application which I wanted to plug before we finish this podcast. I gather it's traditional to pick an app of the week. So I'm going to pick the fact that the YouTube app, which for 2.5 years on Windows Phone has sat as a shortcut to the YouTube mobile site, and I won't go into the politics of why that happened, but the floodgates have been open. There's a whole new native YouTube app, including a downloader, so you can actually download videos and watch them later on from a download section, which is really nice. So you can now take your YouTube client fully working, fully whiz-bang, in my view, as good as MetroTube. And then if you actually know you're about to head off onto the tube, you can grab that particular video, that particular 10 minutes or 20 minutes worth, and then watch it on the tube and then delete it again. So it's not as ideal as having a complete video media library on your phone in your 32 gigabyte or 64 gigabyte phone. But within the limitations of 16 gigabyte phone, this new YouTube app might be quite a revelation and a good way to watch streaming video on your Windows phone.
Yeah, I've just been watching some upcoming cinema trailers using that app, and it's a big improvement, and it actually fills one of the more annoying app gaps. I mean, previously I'd been using the kind of the mobile version of the YouTube website, but having a client, especially something like YouTube, it really works well, and it integrates with your own account, and so you can also get access to your subscriptions and your watch it later list and everything like that. So yes, a real high profile one. The app of the week I'm going to mention, it's really only suitable for our UK audience, so I apologise to everyone else. Go and download the Superman app or something like that instead. It's BBC iPlayer. That's just come out for the Lumia Windows Phone 8 devices. For those that don't know, assuming you're overseas, it's basically a TV and video and radio on demand from the British Broadcasting Corporation. That's our public broadcaster here in the UK, and so it's a great way again of getting video content onto your device, and it's been one of those ones that I think UK users have wanted to come along for quite some time now, so it's good to see it arrive on Windows Phone.
Yes, looking forward to the write-up of that, and that's happening, being released today as we record this on the Wednesday. I think we're out of time, Rafe. I have been Steve Litchfield, unusually for the All About Windows Phone podcast, and any last words from you?
Well, just thank you, Steve, for agreeing to guest star on the Windows Phone podcast. I think with his imaging insights, we need to get him on here a little bit more frequently, even if he does mention the S word every now and then.
Well, when the 925 arrives, try and stop me coming on. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you all next week. Bye.